Okay, I'm going to talk this afternoon about some aspects of periodontal disease epidemiology and how that interfaces with systemic diseases and conditions. I'm going to focus it as an illustrative example on relationships between the impact of periodontal disease on diabetes. I'll also talk a little bit about cardiovascular. Is this on the timer?
No.
About cardiovascular disease and perhaps adverse pregnancy outcomes. Our focus will be on diabetes. As you can see in the outline, I'm going to give a brief overview of diabetes, and this may be something we can go through pretty quickly. And also talk a little bit about an overview of periodontal disease, I want to do a check right now. How many people are clinical or public health dentists or oral health care providers in the room? Okay, and I think the other people, at least one of the other people, knows some of this anyway. So there we go. All right, that's helpful. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about how we think about periodontal disease and other and its relationship to chronic lifestyle diseases. Then we're going to look at periodontal disease and diabetes through a series of questions. One is going to be first, laying the framework with a conceptual model of how periodontal disease contributes to a chronic inflammatory burden, and then how this chronic inflammatory burden contributes to glycemic control, also to diabetes complications, and even recent evidence to suggest that it may contribute to the occurrence of diabetes. And then we're going to talk a little bit about cardiovascular disease, should there be time. I've got Gina giving me my time check, and wrap it up with pregnancy outcomes. So these are well-known statistics by now in terms of the prevalence of diabetes as a common chronic disease of epidemic proportions in the U.S. and globally. Almost 26 million people have diabetes, and 8.3% of the population. But significant that seven million people have undiagnosed diabetes, and this is important as we look at the burden of diabetes in the U.S. population. Incidence is about 2 million per year, and as is periodontal disease and many other chronic conditions. The prevalence increases by age, with people 65 and older, a quarter of them have diabetes. The burden of diabetes in our society is manifest one way by the cost of about $174 billion, which is higher now, and the average medical expenditures are 2.3 times greater. One of the major leading causes of death and its effect. The important thing about diabetes is that there are effective interventions that can prevent its occurrence, and also there are effective interventions to contribute to multiple good outcomes in people when they have diabetes. This slide is to show the global epidemic. The deeper the color, the more prevalent diabetes is in the countries that you see. And another major point is that in the top 10 countries with diabetes, the countries are not always by the size of the population. For example, Japan, Pakistan, and Italy and Bangladesh are countries which do not have the largest populations, and yet they have amongst the countries with the largest numbers of people with diabetes. And here is where we look at periodontal disease and start to think about how it might be related to diabetes. First, periodontal disease is a chronic inflammatory disease. We know it's a bacterial etiology with gram-negative pathogens as the most important ones in the pathogenesis of periodontal disease. Of course, we all know that there's a formation of pathologic pockets. Paul has mentioned the increased prevalence that we detect with more extensive examinations, the loss of the connective tissue and loss of alveolar bone in the clinical local site intraorally. Leads to tooth loss. It's one of the major causes of tooth loss. There's some debate as to in adults as to whether or not it is the the largest cause of tooth loss in adults, because caries is also an important problem in adults, particularly older adults. Most importantly for this conversation today, periodontal disease, we believe, and the infection and the host response is the source of a chronic inflammatory challenge. And this chronic inflammatory challenge is not only locally, intraorally, but also systemically. So, this challenge, and we'll see it a little bit more in slides, is by the bacteria and their products, as well as the host response with inflammatory mediators contributing to responses that lead to a chronic systemic inflammation. Most people in this room know what gingivitis is, reversible. It is also can progress if untreated in susceptible individuals. Not all individuals will experience progression of gingivitis. It's reversible with good preventable with good oral care and good dental care, and also reversible with good oral care. It's the severe periodontitis and the moderate. This is obviously a case of severe periodontitis that reflects the loss of attachment, loss of alveolar bone, the destruction of the soft tissue, loss of teeth. And also, we can see the extreme purulence and the very poor oral hygiene, all factors contributing to this chronic inflammatory burden and also the loss of the supporting structure and the dentition. So then, Paul has already shown us the prevalence of periodontal disease in his slides, and this shows there's a dramatic change, as we've already seen, that moderate, all of the characterizations using the AAP CDC definition of mild, moderate, and severe. Though Paul's made those points about increasing prevalence as age increases for moderate, and a little bit more plateaued for in across the older ages when we look at severe periodontitis. And similarly, Paul mentioned the mild periodontitis. So then, What I wanted to talk about is this notion that we look at periodontal disease as one of the chronic lifestyle diseases, similarly to diabetes, the atherosclerotic diseases, and including chronic kidney disease and some others. These chronic lifestyle diseases are important public health problems globally. They share a behavioral component, an important behavioral component that we really don't have good grips on for periodontal treatment and self-care. They share common elements in their etiology, and I'll show some of those in just a second. And the biologic link is the chronic systemic inflammation, either in the pathogenesis or the progression of these chronic diseases. The disease course is also reflected in this chronic systemic inflammation, as well as bidirectional adverse effects when we think about diabetes and periodontal disease. These conditions and diseases are also associated with several common types of risk factors. This is a list that's not foreign to people in this room when we think about the risk factors. Paul mentioned tobacco use, for example, which is common to many of these diseases, age, diabetes. I'm not going to read the whole list, and yet another important one on this list is obesity because of its chronic inflammatory burden as well. And there are very marked similarities between, there are marked similarities between how the inflammatory mediators produced by obesity are mirrored with the inflammatory mediators produced by periodontal disease. So that systemic inflammatory burden of obesity is very similar in terms of molecular behavior as the systemic inflammatory behavior in periodontal diseases. Here's a slide that works to link obesity, type 2 diabetes, and periodontal infection. On the left, you see the conditions that oftentimes associated with obesity. The yellow conditions are associated both with obesity and periodontal disease or periodontal infection. And on the right, we look at type 2 diabetes, and some of the commonly recognized and commonly identified conditions that are associated both with type 2 diabetes and those epidemiologic studies that exclude periodontal infection, and also when epidemiologic epidemiologic studies examine periodontal infection, there are links to those inflammatory and also several atherosclerotic type diseases. So then we think about what are the adverse effects of periodontal infection on diabetes, and how do we think about these, how we think about these relationships could be described in this scheme. Well, and what I'd like to emphasize is that in periodontal disease, where we have the local destruction, you see the destruction of the bone and the gingival tissue, the presence of the plaque biofilm, it produces this chronic inflammatory burden. The molecules and several of the outcomes are very similar to obesity, as you see represented in that big cartoon on the left. So then either of those conditions lead to the chronic inflammatory expression, and also along with genetic factors produces an overexpression of certain molecules, which we call cytokines and inflammatory mediators. Those some of the molecules that are common to both obesity and periodontal disease are interleukin-1 beta, interleukin-6, tumor necrosis factor alpha. And these molecules produced locally in the inflamed periodontal tissue or in the adipose tissue then stimulate the liver to induce the liver to an acute phase response to produce another set of mediators, and also to act directly on cells to contribute to insulin resistance, that is the inability of the cells to uptake glucose for energy and metabolism. And it's insulin resistance that we think is a major component of the relationship between periodontal disease and the diabetes outcomes. And you see on the far right, diabetes, occurrence of diabetes, the thought, that's a little bit equivocal at this point, but the issue of glycemic control certainly is important. So this is a conceptual model, if you will, to give us a biological plausibility as to how periodontal infection could adversely affect outcomes related to diabetes. We would then ask the question, well, is there any empirical evidence that supports this notion? And I'm going to show you one example of a study. This is a recent study that examined National Health and Nutrition Examination data from 1999 to 2004. So then these periodontal measures, from an epidemiologic point of view, are going to be not from a full mouth exam. It'll be from three sites per tooth. So then Paul mentioned that one issue to consider is misclassification. And in this case, the misclassification would be in people who have the outcome, in this case it's insulin resistance, or who do not. So then that speaks even more strongly to the association that we find being real. At least it supports that notion. So in this study, 3,616 diabetes-free individuals were studied. So the question is, does periodontal disease have any influence on people who are free of diabetes? And the exposure was periodontal disease measured by quartiles of probing pocket depth or by the CDC AAP definition of no mild, moderate, and severe severe periodontitis. So then we had two definitions of the exposure. And the question was whether or not people with periodontal disease were more likely to have insulin resistance than those who did not. And again, these are people who are diabetes free. So we start the story with what happens in people who do not even have diabetes. The homeostasis model assessment is a way of using values for glucose, fasting glucose, and fasting insulin divided by a constant to give an estimate of the amount of insulin resistance that any individual has. It's shown to be effective in population-based studies. What the study found, this is Demonaw at University of at Columbia University. The study found that probing pocket depth was indeed associated with insulin resistance at a relative risk of about 1.24. So that for every millimeter increase in probing pocket depth, the risk of insulin resistance increased by 24%. Using the CDC AAP of severe definition, that is whether or not individuals had or did not have severe periodontitis, the relative risk was 2.3. So it was significantly associated. The other important part about this study is that it controlled for other risk factors. We're in good shape. So then we'd say, what about its effect on glycemic control? That would be in people with diabetes. So we'll move from people without to people with diabetes now. And there are observational studies. One was conducted, I was a part of in my dissertation work with the Pima Indians in Phoenix, Arizona. And we followed people 18 to 67 years old who were dentate and had at least two biennial follow-up exams. And all of these individuals had baseline hemoglobin A1C, the measure for glycemic control, less than 9, which was a value used at that time. This study was done in 1996. We wouldn't use that value now as a cut point for anything. And what you see is in the younger age groups, a higher proportion having poorer glycemic control at follow-up if they had more severe periodontal disease. Those would be the individuals in red. Those individuals in red would, by radiographic bone loss, were considered to have more severe, and those in blue were considered to have less severe based on the amount of radiographic bone loss. You know, there's a dramatic observation that people in the older age group, for reasons we can discuss later, did not manifest this. But overall, the relative risk or the odds ratio was very high in each of the two younger mean age groups, even after controlling for baseline hemoglobin A1C, which would be a very powerful predictor and would attenuate any associations that we might find or any risk if this was a spurious association. So then we say, well, what happens if we treat periodontal disease? Does it improve glycemic control? And studies from all over the world have been conducted, and there are many reports in the literature. What I'll do is show you a meta-analysis of several meta-analyses that produce consistent results. And the far left are the studies, and then as you see this blue highlighted column, this is the change in hemoglobin A1C. All of the studies showed an improvement in hemoglobin A1C, and as you can see by the confidence intervals, some were not significant, and others, as we move forward, were significant. The point is that this reduction in hemoglobin A1C, as shown in the studies, is about 0.4, 0.6, 0.4. And this is a meaningful reduction, a clinically meaningful reduction. It would be similar to what one would find in drug trials, and it would be one that people would be very interested in. These have been all small studies to this point. So what's the significance of treating periodontal disease and improving glycemic control? One is that a sustained lowering in blood glucose, any sustained lowering, helps to delay the onset or the progression of microvascular complications of diabetes. Another advantage is that, as you can see, for each percentage point decline in hemoglobin A1C, there's a 35% reduction in the risk of microvascular complications. And then finally, the reduction in A1C by about 0.2% associated with a reduction in mortality. So then the next question is, so here we see that we have the potential for improvement in glycemic control from periodontal therapy. Next question is, does periodontal infection have an effect on complications of diabetes? Complications of diabetes go from vascular complications in the brain to the heart to the to the kidneys and to the peripheral vasculature. Actually, it's many other organs as well, and the eyes. So then we want to know, is there any research that supports that? And one study in Scandinavia found that people with severe periodontal disease, and this is and type 1 or type 2 diabetes, were more likely to have cardiovascular complications after 6 years follow-up, such as stroke, transient ischemic attacks, angina, and intermittent claudication. Another study in the Pima Indians found that a prospective study with 11 years median follow-up, that severe periodontal disease was associated with 3 times greater risk for cardiorenal mortality. And then another study in the Pima Indians also found a 2 to 5 times greater risk for either microalbuminuria or end-stage renal disease in people with periodontal disease. So then the next question is, what about periodontal disease as a risk factor for developing diabetes? There are about 4 studies that have tested this hypothesis in an epidemiologic investigation, and I'll talk about 2. One is, again, a study by Ryan Dimmer at Columbia, studied the National Health Examination Follow-Up Survey. People were followed for a mean of 17 years. The exposure was periodontal disease at baseline, and using the periodontal index. That's an epidemiologic measure that we no longer use. And their comparison group were individuals who, by that definition, had no or mild periodontitis. And they found that people with periodontal disease at baseline, after being followed for about 17 years, and controlling for other risk factors for periodontal disease, had a 50 to 100% greater risk for developing type 2 diabetes. There was a study in Japan that looked at civil service officers and using the CPI as moderate or severe versus mild or no periodontitis, found that people did not find a significant association for greater risk for people with periodontal disease. There are 2 other studies from Japan that support the notion that periodontal disease does lead to an increased risk for incidence. So what can we conclude? Well, there's biologic plausibility through the models that I showed you and other models of chronic inflammatory burden that is associated with insulin resistance. There's there's evidence to suggest that periodontal infection is associated with risk for poor glycemic control. There's also evidence to suggest that treating periodontal disease improves glycemic control in people with type 2 diabetes. The evidence for periodontal disease contributing to the onset and severity of diabetes complications is derived from cohort epidemiologic studies, a small number. And then finally, there's a small number of studies, and it's not totally unequivocal that it may increase the risk for type 2 diabetes. So this model, I wanted to highlight some of the epidemiological considerations in terms of measurement of periodontal disease, in terms of some of the broader public health considerations of thinking about periodontal disease as a chronic lifestyle disease, sharing risk factors with other chronic diseases for which it is also associated. So I'll stop there, and then we'll have opportunity to explore other issues when we have our discussion. Thank you very much for your attention.